That work?
I have the recording going. Now let me see. I can make you a host. And my recording looks like it's still going, so I think we're good to go. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, does everybody see this slideshow?
Yes. Okay.
All right, well, here's your quarterly meeting. We'll go ahead and get started.
So a great place to start is an overarching view of the economic landscape. But looking back to the third quarter, we can see it was kind of blessed by that reopening and recovery efforts that happened during that time, and also by the stimulus that was still intact as well. There was some dampening by a little bit of a virus resurgence during that time. Nothing like what we're seeing now, of course, but that was still a contributing factor. So the third quarter was definitely a solid improvement versus quarter two. In terms of what's going on right now, we're looking mostly towards the job environment where some permanent job loss and overall decreased participation is a bit concerning in terms of the economic recovery, where not only are people being laid off, they're actually losing their jobs entirely. There's no job to return to, especially with small business being impacted as it has been. There is also that decreased participation where people are losing the that sort of momentum to continue looking for employment. So these are factors that will contribute to our economic recovery. And with this virus resurgence, we'll probably see even more of these kind of effects in the future. And looking towards the future to quarter four, we see three major impacts that will likely affect quarter four. And this is the upcoming election, the vaccine rollout, and any further delay to stimulus or any changes to that stimulus package that the market would react to negatively. So that's kind of what we're looking at in terms of the broad economy.
As far as the yield curve goes, as you can see, the light line, which is the upper line, that was as of the end of last year, 2019. And the darker line is basically just yesterday, I believe. So it's really current. As you see, it's been obviously a sharp decline. And of course, the Fed basically cut rates near zero at the beginning of the quarter, like February and March. So, but what we've seen is that the bigger decline, of course, is on the short end, which of course what the Fed kind of controls a little bit more. We see it's kind of been range bound a little bit. In fact, just recently, a couple of days ago, it actually hit, the 10-year actually hit highs from what it was back in June, which gave us an opportunity to kind of do a few things there. But as you may have been paying attention the last couple of days, the stock market's been kind of falling a little bit, and of course, interest rates coming down with that. So so that's been good from an appreciation standpoint on the fixed income side. Stock may be down, but again, 30% of the portfolio is in some sort of bond. So as interest rates come down, of course, the value of the bonds are going to go up. Don't really see much change in this. Don't see rates really getting too high or too low at this point. It's pretty much going to stay where it's at for a while. Like I say, some of the things Rachel's talking about is going to hinge upon, you know, kind of how fast rates may recover. But it does look like it's going to be another couple of years in this kind of environment that we're in.
What we're looking at now is an overview of the major indices, the equity indices. Most notably are those mid-cap and small-cap indices. Historically speaking, these tend to underperform in times of uncertainty, so it's nice to see that follow through here. Obviously not a good thing, but it's nice to know we can rely on that kind of historical idea there. So That's where we see the most negativity year to date. It's pretty severe, especially for the small cap. But the good news is that returns for quarter three were positive. So that is good to see. And just a reminder, this is just the benchmarks and not the portfolio itself. So, but it gives you an overall idea of what's happening in the equity markets.
In the fixed income market, same thing here. These are basically the benchmarks, some of which we're using. What is kind of interesting, of course, the first column, two sets of bar graph is the Lipper. Then the third one is also Lipper, which are basically, they're managed. So you're looking at a peer with us managing things as compared to other managers, how they've done. The other two, the Barclays, 1 to 3 year treasury and the government credit, those are basically indices. So that's an unmanaged passive thing. So we kind of look at a couple different things. But what's kind of noticeable is when you look at the managed side, or at least on the corporate side, for the quarter, that did pretty well. And that's the darker line. You see the 110 and then the 0.8 that for the quarter did really well. So the corporate exposure did all right. When you look at more year to date, you look at the two columns for the Lipper U.S. government as well as the government credit were somewhere around 8%. So again, the longer maturity stuff did really well from year to date. And that's because basically, again, when the Fed kind of did their thing and how the appreciation came early on. But as the last quarter, though, things have kind of shifted over to more of the corporate area. So we'll get into, you know, our specific returns later and benchmark against that on performance.
As the IPS stipulates, this account aims to achieve growth with moderate income. So as you can see from the graphs, the actual allocation versus the target is only marginally off. So we're pretty close to being where we want to be in all of the three major asset categories. So this will help us achieve that goal.
On the fixed income side, again, kind of looking at a couple things real quick. The allocation, of course, as we've always kind of consistently done, has been a little bit heavier on the corporate side. So about 2/3 of the bond, the fixed income side, is allocated to corporates. And most of those, of course, are obviously high quality. The U.S. government, which are basically agency securities, which we've had in the portfolio for a while, and we've added to as of late, is up to about a fifth of the portfolio. We do have a few CDs left. As time goes on, those will kind of maybe shift out as we move more into the agencies and corporates. And we do have a small position in treasuries at this point. Off to the right, we look at the ratings based upon Standard & Poor's ratings. Of note is the triple B's. There's like 33%. That's on the lower end of investment grade. So it's still investment grade consideration, but it's on the lower end. But when you look at through our portfolio, as we mentioned in the previous quarters, most of those are financial institutions, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, those type of things. Most of those are rated the triple B's. So, and we're not concerned about anything with banks or so forth at this particular time. So even though the percentage may be seem like a little bit higher that on those, but it's, again, that's the type of securities that's involved with. So overall, it looks pretty good. As most of the portfolio is leased in the upper tiers as far as the rating classifications. This slide talks about the maturity schedule. As you can kind of see off to the right, we have been buying over the last several weeks and months a little longer maturities in anticipation that this rate environment is going to continue for a while to try to capture a little bit more return. So we kind of got a little bit of a hill in there in the 25, 26, 27 range, 5 to 7 years. But we have bought things out as far as 10, 12 years on the other side of it. And we'll probably keep looking at that. And our general strategy basically is looking at the short maturities, the 21, 22, 23s, to see, and some of those are appreciated quite a bit, that from this point forward may not necessarily return as much. So even though we may have nice coupons and that sort of thing, we may decide to capture the profit, shift it to something that may actually be lower yielding, but from a total return standpoint, we'll make a higher overall return. So that's what we're kind of shifting towards. So as you go through the next few quarters, you're going to see more on the 2030s to 2035 to 2040s that'll be out there. And again, since it's a long-term portfolio, that kind of makes some sense. So, but that's kind of where we're at this point. As far as looking at, this is our actual returns on the portfolio. The upper left is the U.S. agency. Those are agency securities, which we've had in the portfolio for a while. Most of those are out there a little bit longer. The benchmark is the Lipper Short Intermediate. We did a really good job in outperforming there, of course, mostly because that we're more intermediate, a little bit longer term, which that seems to, that's done a little bit better, particularly year to date, but also in the quarter. In the upper right is Treasuries. Of course, we only have the one, so, you know, the numbers kind of get a little skewed from there, possibly. So for the quarter, it was about right. But for the year-to-date, of course, it's lagged somewhat. And that's compared to the Barclays, the Bloomberg Barclays 5- to 10-year Treasury. And that Treasury, I think, was like in a 9-year Treasury, so it's in the longer end of things. To the bottom left is the U.S. corporate. As we talked about how well those have kind of performed, particularly as of late. We pretty much matched the benchmark, which in this case, again, was the Lipper Short Intermediate Investment Grade, which is basically what we invest into. Year-to-date, we outperformed the benchmark by a little bit. CDs, which are, of course, it's not quite categorized totally correct on the benchmark on government credit, but that's usually where they kind of place it. So it didn't quite perform as well. Again, we're kind of looking at CDs overall in all of our accounts. They're safe and secure, but the thing is that we kind of maybe can do a little bit better as far as rates of return. So as time comes on, and it has been, we've been kind of weeding ourselves out of those and shifting more into the agencies and the corporate bonds. So that was probably the bigger laggard as far as for the quarter. But again, we don't have a whole lot. Big allocation of that particular sector at this point. So overall, fixed income did pretty well. Considering a little bit of volatility in the market, but I think, again, our choices and stuff and the length of our maturities are kind of playing out pretty well. We're going to kind of continue on that track.
All right, here we have the equity fund returns for the account. Starting with mid-cap core funds up in the top left, we can see that the portfolio holdings beat the benchmark pretty well in this category. Moving on to the top right to mid-cap growth, we didn't perform quite as well in this benchmark, especially year-to-date, but Q3 returns were pretty strong nonetheless. Mid-cap value down the bottom left did not have quite the same success as core and growth funds, but we were still able to beat the benchmark year-to-date by avoiding some additional downside in that category. For Q3, the results were positive with a 5.8% return, which barely lagged the benchmark in this category. And finally, let's look at the small cap value, which is probably one of the hardest hit objectives in 2020, as many small cap firms struggled with COVID-19 restrictions and things along those lines. And as you can see, the benchmark was quite weak along with our portfolio holdings in year to date and Q3 for small cap, but we do not have a whole lot allocated to small cap funds or equities, so that kind of helped with that. Moving on, we have the fund returns for additional equities and some commodity funds. Starting with gold in the top left, we can see that we lagged the benchmark, but only by a small with only a small amount allocated to gold in the single fund. So it's not quite unusual to lag a benchmark when you don't have a whole lot allocated to it. Essentially, gold is there just to provide some stability in the market, or when the market volatility is high. The way 2020's gone so far, it's been kind of a nice little bonus holding for us. On the international equities on the top right, we can see that we came close to the benchmark in Q3 and year to date. Unfortunately, international equity funds have seen some additional volatility this year, but we came close to the benchmark in Q3 and year to date. Finally, let's see the Pacific funds down here at the bottom. It performed quite well. We lagged the benchmark year to date, but Q3 has been very strong, and we topped the benchmark by 2.5% in Q3 for the Pacific fund. So overall, we're pretty happy with the returns for all the funds.
So here is a graphic that represents the major equity categories as a percent of the entire portfolio. The actual amounts are at least relatively close to their respective categories. A larger allocation to the large cap category helps improve quality and limits some volatility, and Sam will touch more on that in a minute. And the moderate allocation to the smaller cap category and to developed markets allows for that growth potential as well.
So here we have the allocation breakdown considering only equities. The previous slide had to do with the whole portfolio. This slide is just considering the equities. As you can see, we have a 60.5% allocation to large cap equities that provide stable growth. You know, they're big companies, they're relatively safe. We have a 27.5% allocation towards mid-cap equities that provide some additional growth opportunities from companies that have not quite matured. Next, we have small cap equities at 5.7% allocation, and this just helps provide further growth opportunities from small companies with high growth potential. We've limited exposure here on small caps because they tend to be volatile, especially in a year like 2020 with COVID restrictions and things along those lines. We have a 5.5% allocation to international funds, which again provides some additional growth opportunities from areas outside the US. Similar to small caps, we've limited exposure to mitigate risk in this category as well. And finally, we have a category called other, which is just your exposure to gold that we went over. And again, this just acts as a bit of insurance during volatile times like 2020.
The basic materials sector is pretty close to the target, but is slightly limited there with a lower allocation by 0.2%. This is partially because we currently only have one focus stock in this sector. So we are just essentially trying to avoid an over-concentration into any one specific firm. But we do come close to that allocation. And as you can see from the returns on the right-hand side there, our stock has performed very well year-to-date and for the quarter.
Here we have the communication services sector. We have a bit lower allocation towards this sector as we find there are few high quality firms in the sector and even fewer that we don't view as overvalued. Nevertheless, returns have been pretty good. We lagged the benchmark year to date, but Q3 results have been pretty strong. We topped the benchmark by 0.4% there, and as the sector holdings rebound in the third quarter.
And the consumer discretionary sector is next. A near target weighting allows for some growth potential, but contrary to what the name may suggest, this isn't limited to just times of economic booms. That's because customers have what is called perceived needs. So even if it might technically be categorized as a discretionary item, customers may still be buying it when times are tough because they still feel that they need to go out and buy these products. And that that includes things like car parts and home needs. So a couple great examples of that would be the holdings in Home Depot and in O'Reilly. So even though it's been a tough year and, you know, many are out of jobs or, you know, facing tighter budgets at home, their car breaks down, they're still going to stop by O'Reilly and pick up those parts. So we're seeing some nice returns there. Not quite meeting the benchmark, but still doing very well regardless.
Next, we have the consumer staples sector. Here we have bolstered exposure in the sector in an attempt to provide some stability to the account by investing in firms that make products that are almost always sought after. Firms like McCormick, Clorox, Pepsi, Cisco, Walmart, and others represent the major holdings in this sector. Unfortunately, Cisco, a food delivery company, if you're not familiar with them, they've had an unusually rough year due to COVID-19 restrictions, putting a damper, especially on their restaurant deliveries. It's hard to have a good restaurant delivery business when there's no restaurants to deliver to. We're still confident in Cisco long-term, But unfortunately, they have drugged down the sector returns. As you can see here, we've lagged the benchmark, and that is mainly due to Cisco's struggles this year. But as I said before, we're confident long-term they'll come back and everything will kind of normalize as the pandemic normalizes.
Now, we don't currently allocate to the energy sector, and this is no different from when we met last time, except for now we see some additional political risk kind of weighing heavily on uncertainties we already had for the sector. So this kind of adds to the concerns we already had, and we're kind of just avoiding this for the time being, maybe just kind of keeping an eye on it to see when a better entry point may be. Again, we're not closing this door, but just right now it's a sector we are avoiding just to protect our clients.
On this slide, we have the healthcare sector. We have allocated the sector pretty close to the S&P 500's allocation, yet we've been able to handily beat the benchmark year to date by choosing really high quality firms in this sector. Overall, we're quite happy with the sector and how it's performed throughout the year, and we think it will continue to perform well going forward.
And the financials are very well diversified, and they all have healthy balance sheets, which is great to see right now during a time of so much uncertainty. There's some negativity in the year to date, and this stems from the general economic uncertainty, and the need for higher loan loss reserves have kind of stimulated some negativity in the market. But we believe that the financial services sector is poised for a really nice long-term growth potential with potentially just some short-term headwinds. So we're not overly concerned with that negative year to date. And you can see to the left of that, it did pick up in quarter three. So good to see.
Here are the industrial sector, which we currently have a pretty high allocation to. And this is a result of international holdings like Siemens, which are classified as industrial, as well as some other high quality domestic industrial firms. It's proven to be a pretty good move as the sector has been quite the performer, especially in Q3. As you can see, we have beaten the benchmark by a wide margin here, about 6% just in Q3. So industrial has been quite strong, and we hope they'll continue to be quite strong going forward.
A substantial weight in the IT category is definitely warranted considering the growing worldwide dependence on cloud-based software, smart-enabled products, and the like. This sector has been quite resilient during the coronavirus crisis because of its naturally low-contact nature. So it doesn't involve a lot of people being close to each other. So it's kind of been a nice area of the portfolio. Looking at the returns, this is quite obvious. We've got this a nice double-digit return for the year to date. It does lag the benchmark a bit, but I think it's worth noting here that the benchmark definitely has that higher allocation there. So that kind of skews that a bit. So.
Here we have the real estate sector. And as you can see, we have a low allocation for this sector. We view the sector as highly oversupplied in general and overvalued. In fact, 2020 has exacerbated this issue with rent collection issues, work from home movements, and limited foot traffic in public areas such as malls, department stores, things along those lines, due to, again, COVID-19 restrictions. As a result, the sector has been quite weak in 2020. Unfortunately, we've lagged the benchmark in the sector year to date. Luckily, we limited the exposure so that it doesn't have a huge effect on the portfolio overall. But yeah, it's not been the best performing sector from benchmark or from our portfolio standpoint.
And quite the opposite of that is the utilities sector. superior selection of stocks in this category allows for a super strong outperformance, which you can see from the returns on the right-hand side of the screen. These naturally downturn-resistant stocks also provide the account with some nice stability and some nice dividends. So we do actually have an overweight allocation to this sector for that reason.
All right, and finally, let's take a look at the subclass and class blended return metrics. From a blended subclass point of view, we have beaten the benchmark slightly in both Q3 and year to date. When looking below at the blended class mark benchmark, we have lagged the benchmark year to date, but we've made up some ground in Q3. It is worth mentioning we feel this blended benchmark is not quite representative of our holdings, not quite a fair comparison, as it groups all of our large cap, mid cap, small cap equities together and compares it to the S&P 500, which is only only has large caps in it. So it's not quite a similar or not quite a fair comparison from that standpoint. It's a similar story on the fixed income side as well. So this kind of skews the overall results a bit from a blended class return metric standpoint. We feel that the subclass benchmarks are much more closely representative of our holdings as it compares small cap to small cap, actively managed funds to actively managed funds, and so on. So it's worth noting when looking at this slide. And that is it for our presentation today. Does anybody have any questions?
I've got a question. Can you elaborate, Sam, or somebody else chime in on that last slide again, the total portfolio returns, just so that I can get this straight in my mind. Can you explain again the difference between the subclass blended and the class blended?
Yes. So subclass blended, my sheet here, it kind of breaks it down. So like materials, it breaks down to materials, industrials, all the sectors are broken out and they're compared against the things like, you know, S&P materials index, but it's effectively the S&P 500 that all those are compared to. Then it also breaks down, our mid cap funds, our small cap funds, and it compares them to a corresponding benchmark, a small cap benchmark, a mid-cap benchmark, things like that. So it's more of a fair comparison. When you looking at the class blended, it puts all these together. So it takes all of our large cap equities, all of our mid cap, all of our small cap, combines them together, and then compares it to the S&P 500 as a whole. So it's comparing all of our smaller cap holdings to larger cap holdings from the S&P 500. And obviously large cap generally performs better most times. So that's, I don't know if that really answers your question, if I was clear enough there.
And maybe it's as easy as me, probably better time spent just one-on-one with you, kind of drawing it out on a piece of paper. Yeah. So I'll come seek you out on that.
We can do that for sure.
Yeah, one other thing to point out that's not in our packet, If you recall, we had a big discussion earlier in the year about the investment policy statement, making sure, because that's the other benchmark that we actually use, which is really, to me, is the benchmark for this whole thing, is our target rate of return and so forth, that net of fees and so forth, what our gross return would be, then factor in some inflation and factor in enough for the 5% distribution and allow a little bit extra after that. Well, through the end of September, and this goes all the way back to when we started the reporting, which is a little after the account, I think, was established. This would be like the 1st of June of 2016, so about 4 1/3 years, which is getting into that 3 to 5 year market cycle type thing and whatever. But again, the target rate of return was 8%. The performance since inception, net of fees and so forth, was 7.86. So it's just really close to that. So, it's always going to be a going forward, maybe a little bit of a battle trying to keep to that goal. But I think with the 70-30 allocation, we kind of are on pretty good track with that. And say with some changes we're doing in the fixed income, as well as a little bit in the equity side, I think we could still continue to meet that from that standpoint. So, but anyway, I just want to share that. I'll say it wasn't in the packet, but I think that's the other, again, overriding benchmark of this whole thing. If we keep on track with that, we're going to be able to meet what we need to do as far as in terms of distributions and account growth and that sort of thing.
We do for an update on the IPS again. Usually it's annually. I think we were a little behind last year.
Yeah, we were, because we had a lot of discussion. We had to go back to drawing board and come back a few things. But yeah, I can't remember the exact date, but it is either late this year or in January.
January.
But yeah, it's we've set it up to be sure we review it at least once a year, which I think is a good thing. So yeah, we can have the discussion all over again and see what we want to do based upon the new environment we're in. And because obviously the last time we talked about that was pre-COVID period and everything else, and rates were a little bit different. So, you know, we may take a different view of it this time around. So to me, that's an important document, and that's the thing that we ought to be focused on more than anything else as far as achieving the goals you all need to have.
I appreciate that. I just share that with the board annually for approval. So thank you.
Good. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I noticed since that period of time, the performance, the market value went from 23.3 million to 26.4 million, and we distributed out over $5.2 million. So we've had this $4 million plus $5.2 million was distributed out to the library, the school, and to Graham Hospital, with, of course, half of that going to the library. So over a period of time, that's a lot of money.
Hey, Rick, can you elaborate on the IPS, the 8% goal? How is the total return of the portfolio measured against that goal again? What's that formula?
To come up with the 8%?
Yes.
Yeah, some of that's looked at historical data, you know, because Sam were talking about, our target allocation is 70-30. So, and of the 70%, you know, about a third of it's in large cap, part of it's in mid cap, small cap, whatever. And historically, just again, looking at history, you know, small caps typically do better than mid cap, which do better than large cap. But they come up with these percentages as far as historically, this is like for example, large cap would be 10%, small cap would be like 12. You know, mid cap is usually somewhere in the middle, around 11, that type of thing. So if we have a target allocation of percent here, 20% there, whatever, and then the same thing with fixed income. Historically, usually intermediate term bonds have made 5%, which I know we would love to see 5% today, but that's not realistic. So we, of course, back that down quite a bit, and we have 30% allocated to that area. So when you start doing the math and adding it all up and factoring a couple of things, but also trying to look forward, because, you know, backwards is one thing, but going forward, again, with the low interest rate environment, you can't use the 5%. We kind of tempered it a little bit. So then we come up with a gross return of somewhere, I think it's actually closer to 9, but we kind of, again, backed it off a little bit. And then, of course, based upon our fee, which is roughly a third of a percent, it nets out to about 8% as far as a gross rate of return. And then from that, we factor in that we've assumed 2.5% inflation, and that leaves us 5.5% basically for the 5% distribution. So that's kind of how we somewhat back into it. But again, we had a discussion about this. I think this is before you came on board last time, and there was a discussion about lowering that to 7%. You know, based upon some data and information I provide to the group, everybody was okay with leaving an 8%. But again, that was pre-COVID period when rates were a little bit different than they are today. So there may be some justification for making an adjustment for that.
So is that rate of the 7% that you had mentioned earlier?
Yeah.
Are we talking about an annualized return goal, or is this an average return over a specific period? I should know this, but
the 8%, yeah, it's an average annualized rate of return. So it's kind of like the stuff you were going through this morning. Here's the line, you know, are we above or below the line? Are we on the line? But the goal is to be close to it. So right now we're like, we were 14 basis points off of that goal. We should have been at 8. But on the other flip side of that, though, inflation, we figured it at 2.5 in order to come up there. Everything's actually been a little bit less than that. So in reality, when you look at the net and what we're really trying to come up to, because the true figure is the 5.5 to make the distribution of whatever, that we actually exceeded that by a little bit because of, but thankfully because inflation was a little bit lower and from that standpoint. But yeah, that's the 7.86 annualized as compared to the 8% annualized on that. So at some point, now that we got a few more years, that's always a chart we can show, you know, like here's an 8% target range where we're supposed to be at, you know, what is our long-term, you know, goal from that standpoint. And I think that's the importance of the investment policy statement. To me, that's really the overriding, you know, benchmark of the whole thing. If we're doing that, then we're meeting the goals of what the account's supposed to do.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. Anyone else? Any other questions? Okay. Well, Kim, thanks for being such a great coming in on your vacation and all. Such dedication. Unbelievable.
Not a problem. Thank you for presenting for us.
Okay. Well, of course, and we have the packet, but if there's anything else anybody's got a question on, you know how to reach us, and we'd be happy to, you know, discuss any more with you. And I guess we'll look forward to seeing you in January unless we need to visit before then.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good day, all.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.